the Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. Doug Kellett is off today, but we're glad to have you here listening to the Battleground State Report. And this is a weekly program where we talk about what's going on in battleground states. And I want to give you a firsthand account of what happened in Iowa this past week. That was quite an adventure, I'll tell you. I was there on the ground in Iowa, and those of you who listen to our weekly program, or our daily program, broadcast 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. every weekday morning on Talk Radio 98.3 and 1510 WLAC, the Tennessee Star Report, you know that on Monday, I broadcast the program live from the studios of WHO Radio in Des Moines, Iowa, and Tuesday as well. And the caucus events were held that Monday evening in Iowa, and they had about 1,700 caucuses around the state. The results were not reported until yesterday morning, Friday, February the 7th. So that was really, quite a long wait. And, I like Iowa, by the way. It's a very interesting state. It's about, 3 million people. They only have four congressional districts. The drive, I flew up. And because I couldn't get a flight back in a timely manner, I drove back on Tuesday. That was quite a drive, I'll tell you. It's about 700 miles. And those of you who are road warriors do that sort of thing all the time. But it was an interesting opportunity to see kind of what Iowa is like in the eastern part of the state. You drive from Des Moines and you go down basically towards the Mississippi River. You cut off near Hannibal, go through St. Louis and through southern Illinois, Kentucky, and then on 24 into Nashville. It's sort of a beautiful, serene kind of look. You don't have really mountains at all. You have sort of very gently rolling hills. It's not flat like Kansas or Oklahoma, where it's just very, very hard to take, just flat, flat, flat. It's rolling hills, the kind of hills that, you see in Andrew Wyeth paintings of a farmhouse and, kind of classic America. Very, a very nice drive. And the other thing I want to say about Iowa, very nice people in Iowa. Really nice. Everybody that you meet there is just solid folks. It's mostly kind of farming, as you know. There's small cities. There's some manufacturing. Of course, Des Moines is the capital of Iowa. And, we were broadcasting there from the studios of WHO Radio, where Ronald Reagan got his start back in the 1930s. You may remember the famous story where, he would broadcast Chicago Cub baseball games. And they weren't able, he would be in the studio, and not the studio where I was. In fact, the building there in where WHO is headquartered, about a five-story building, modern building. It's, I think it's only about like 20 years old. It's not the original building, obviously, where the radio station was housed. That building, I guess when I go back there, I'll find out. I mean, might look at where WHO studios were when Ronald Reagan was there. But President Reagan, of course, very interesting broadcasting career. And he would tell the story about how he would broadcast the baseball games. And in those days, you didn't have, internet or radio. Even the radio connections weren't, you couldn't listen to it on the radio from Chicago. You would have to, they would send a ticker tape, right? And the ticker tape would print out, and then it would just say very minimal stuff like ball one, ball two. And the time between you'd get a ticker tape in those days, would sometimes be 2 minutes. Anyways, Reagan would say, he would get this and he would go through all of this description of, you know, ball one. And he would describe where the ball was. And he would talk about the pitcher, and the pitcher, you know, was doffing his cap and rubbing the ball. All this made-up stuff. It was just kind of hilarious. So, yeah, it's hard to be in WHO radio studios and not have that come to mind. The other interesting thing about that in Iowa, it's sort of interesting state, it's got four congressional districts in it. Tennessee here has nine, so it's about half the size population-wise, maybe a little less than Tennessee. But Des Moines is the capital city, and it is the dominant radio outlet in the state. There are little small radio stations all around Iowa, but Des Moines dominates. It's one of these 50,000-watt clear channel stations like WLAC is here in Nashville. And so they have a very strong talk radio lineup. They have a Van and Bonnie in the Morning. Van has been there for 31 years. And he starts his program at 4:55, not 5 o'clock or 5:05, as our Tennessee Star report does. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, the farmers are up and they're looking for their early reports, and that's sort of been their tradition. They start at 4:55. That's pretty, I mean, starting the show at 5:05 is enough of a challenge when we do the Tennessee Star report. When we come back, I want to tell you more about the actual experience of being in a caucus, what's it like, what's good about it, what's bad about it. Mostly good, but some bad that you've heard about. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy, back after this.
This is the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here, giving you the inside scoop of what went on in the Iowa Democratic Caucus debacle. And debacle is not too strong a word. In fact, it may understate just how poorly run those caucuses were. Let me set the scene for this, so you'll know kind of how this works. So I flew into Des Moines Sunday afternoon, stopped by the radio station, got the key card to get in at 4 o'clock the Monday morning and 4 o'clock on Tuesday morning so we could give you the live broadcast there. And then I went to a hotel room in West Des Moines and got up the next morning, did the radio show, and then came out and went to filed a couple of stories. Actually, I went to I was reporting for Breitbart up there, and I first filed a story describing the whole process. And the way the Democrats have set it up, it sort of makes your eyes glaze over. But I'll try to describe what the rules were supposed to be like. And contrast with the Republicans caucus. The Republicans held an event there as well, but they don't have as labyrinthian rules. They're very kind of straightforward. When you go to a caucus, you report your vote and they record the vote, and that's it. That's how the Republicans do it. Pretty straightforward. The Democrats, however, they have this elaborate process. And so here's how, and I went there and witnessed one of these in Waukee, Iowa, which is a little town about 40 miles due west of Iowa, of Des Moines, rather, in Dallas County. Waukee has about 13,000 people, and Dallas County, 66,000. That caucus on Monday night was held at the St. Boniface Catholic Church. I was one of the media people there. Then another media person there had a nice conversation with Margaret Timothy of the Washington Post. And she sort of had the same observations about the caucus events that I did. But we'll get to that in a bit. So, you know, you've probably read so much about Iowa. And now the results have come in and you got Pete Buttigieg claiming to have won. He got, I think it's like, the result of the caucus was he got 564 state delegate equivalents. And Bernie Sanders, which was like 26.2% of the vote, of the state delegate equivalents awarded, Bernie Sanders got 562. So like, you know, 26.1%. And so Buttigieg on that claims victory. But wait, there's more. In the first alignment of votes, Bernie Sanders got 6,000 more votes than Buttigieg. It's like 24.5% to 21%. So he's claiming victory. Okay, so what do we make of all this? Well, let me explain how the process works, or is supposed to work. It goes like this. So if you are a Democrat, or if you want to be a Democrat, you go to, and you live in a certain precinct and you have a voting location, typically a precinct, that precinct then will have a caucus location. It's usually a church, a school, some, you know, public venue. And when you go there, if you're not a Democrat, if you're not a registered voter, you can register there on site, like then and now, and then be eligible to participate. So they go over the rules, and by the way, I was at Waukee, and I was, you know, watching this, and I had to have observer status, and they kind of put you off in a far end of the corner, and you're not supposed to talk to anybody. You just observe. One thing that was really weird about Waukee, and I don't know why they did this, it led to confusion, is they took a big, big, big church hall at St. Boniface Catholic Church, and they put dividers right down the middle, you know, these like 6-foot wall divide, 6-foot high dividers. And on the one side was Waukee Precinct 5, and on the other side was Waukee Precinct 3. Each precinct had about 260 folks in attendance. Okay, and so they're both proceeding with their own agenda. I mean, so you're and I was actually located at the far edge of this hall, the far wall, and I could look to my left, and I could see Precinct 5, and I could look to my right, and I could see Precinct 3. And they were both proceeding with the events at about the same time. And so if you want to talk about having a cacophony of sound, which was hard to understand, that's what it was. You know, it was very hard to focus. And for those in attendance, it would be quite confusing. So here's how it works. So they go in and you register, you sign up. And they give you a paper ballot. And that paper ballot is for the purpose of submitting to them your first alignment presidential preference. Okay? So you actually have a paper ballot. And I think this may have been the first time they handed out paper ballots. And so what's interesting about this on Precinct 5, which got moving a little faster than Precinct 3, they said, well, here was the beginning of it. What the precinct chair said, the party person designated to run this, they said, well, we counted 262 people. And then when they got their first alignment preferences back, they got 272 ballots back. So they had 10 more, which was kind of crazy. And then their final count on the first alignment was only 251. So the numbers were off, quite off to begin with. So that was a little bit odd. The precinct chair, when he was explaining all this, said, well, you know, we Democrats aren't very good at math. You think? Oh, no, they weren't very good. So, but the way this works then is what they're supposed to do is each candidate will give brief, have a representative, a team captain for that precinct, who will give a particular little, you know, brief statement for why you should support that candidate. Now, ironically, in the Precinct 5 caucus, they didn't do that. They did in the Precinct 3 caucus. I don't know why, because supposedly these precinct chairs were all trained in how to do this. So what you do then is you go and you take your little paper ballot and you form a group for each candidate. You have a Biden group, you have a Warren group, a Buttigieg group, a Sanders group. And then the Biden precinct chair collects all of the ballots. They fill it out and they say, I'm for this person or that person. And then they give it to the overall precinct chair and then they do a count. That's how it's supposed to work, okay, for the first alignment. Making sense? Are your eyes glazed over yet? Joey's looking at me like, really? Is that how it works? So anyways, so they did this count. And in the first alignment, you are not able to go forward to the second and final alignment as a candidate unless you have received 15% of the vote. So 260 people, 15% of the vote is 40. 40 people have to be aligned for you. In this particular case, in Precinct 5, there were a total of 95 for Pete Buttigieg, 50 for Elizabeth Warren, 42 for Joe Biden. So those were the only ones over 40 who were viable. Joe Biden was barely viable in that particular precinct. We'll talk more about this when we get back. This is the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.
Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here. Doug Kellen off today, but he'll be with us next week. I was in midstream talking about what these Democratic caucuses were like in Iowa. I was there on Monday night in Waukee, Iowa. And so what's interesting about this is you have the first count. And I had an idea of how this was going to work, but the way the party precinct chair did it was not exactly what the idea that I had was, which was based upon the written rules and regulations. So just to kind of bring you back to speed here then. So in the first alignment, they gathered, as it turned out to be, it was only 251 ballots were presented in the first alignment. And three candidates were above the 40, the number 40 in that particular precinct, Waukee Precinct 5, that made them viable to go on to the second alignment. And it's from the second alignment, county delegates to the county convention are selected. And the county convention is held about a month later. And it's from the county convention. And about statewide, the way it works is there's about 1,700 caucus events. And they select from that about 11,000 county delegates. And then the next step in the process is they then take the county delegate and they allocate them in a formula to reflect not the turnout at the caucus, but the turnout of that particular precinct in the general election. So they weighed it. And so then they then come up with a calculation of these 11,000 county convention delegates who are selected at the caucus on that night of the caucus. Then they wean it and put it through a formula based upon, you know, turnout, et cetera, that weights some more than others. And they end up with a number called a state delegate equivalent. And that is supposed to be the number that you determine as like the winner of the Iowa caucuses. Now, that's kind of controversial, I think. And that's part of the problem. And we'll get to the end result is that Pete Buttigieg ended up with like 0.1% more state delegate equivalents, but Bernie Sanders had about 4% more of the original first alignment vote. Are you still with me or are your eyes glazing over? Okay. It's like, okay, you know, trying to make it more complicated than it needs be. I think that's part of the problem. We'll kind of go on this here in a second. So let me go back to this. So I'm there, and it's about, so the doors open about 6:30, and the event starts at 7. They got off, they were about 10 minutes late before they got on it. And so by 8 o'clock, they've got the first alignment done. Now, you would think that what would happen is the following. You would think that the precinct chair from the party would get up. And remember, there's like 260 people in a room. The big half of the room on one side was precinct 5 and the other side precinct 3. So what you would think is this. You would think that the precinct chair would get up and say, ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded the count from the first alignment. And the results are 251 total votes cast. In first place, Pete Buttigieg with 95 votes. In second place, Elizabeth Warren with 50 votes. And in third place, with 42 votes, Joe Biden. These are the three viable candidates who will proceed to the next and final round. Not making the cut in this precinct were Andrew Yang with 26 votes, Bernie Sanders with 24, and Amy Klobuchar with 14. Now, you would think that would be what they would do. And according to the rules, that information was supposed to be communicated directly to the state party. Now, there were a couple ways to communicate that through an app that didn't work, which caused all sorts of problems, or by a phone call to communicate them, which was sort of supposedly the backup system. Well, what's interesting about this, and which really struck me as a problem of bad training, is that when that precinct chair in Waukee Precinct 5 got up, they did not announce those results, which, by the way, the rules were you're supposed to announce those results. And they're supposed to be reported. So first point, that precinct chair had made a mistake. All they said was, here are the three viable candidates. That's it. They didn't give the vote total, which I think, you know, kind of was, you know, unnecessarily secretive. And they said, well, okay, the only three you can, if you're with Andrew Yang or Bernie Sanders in this particular case, or Amy Klobuchar, you're going to have to join one of these other groups. And the only viable groups now, based upon the first alignment results, are Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden. Okay, so they all gathered and did that. And you have this situation where the precinct chairs for the team captains for, like, Biden, they would have a sign, they would run around, come sign up with us, come sign up with us. And a little bit of that going on. And by the way, let me just add this. Visually, the difference between the people who were in the group for Joe Biden and the group for Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and others, totally different group. The Joe Biden group was older and much more tired. Okay. I was just going to say that. They weren't, you know, they weren't that rousing. They were there. They were older. And that was the case all across of Iowa. Now, so then they redo the second alignment votes. They hand it in to the precinct chair. And you would think the precinct chair would then count them and make an announcement of what the second alignments were. And then they would go and select, you know, delegates to the county convention. Didn't happen. I mean, they were waiting and waiting and waiting, and people went home. And so they didn't know the announcements of this. And so I was talking with Margaret Timmeldy from the Washington Post, and she said, oh, you know, this is the most ridiculous administration. I'm paraphrasing her. This is not, you know, they're not providing us with the information that press usually gets here. And so she left. Everybody left at that time. Now, what I did is I went and I wrote a story at Breitbart about the results of both Precinct 5 and Precinct 3. It was published at 9:45 Central that time, that night. Okay. It was there. The results were known. You can look at the story. What didn't happen, though, no votes were reported at all that evening anywhere in the state. 11 o'clock rolls around. All the networks are waiting for it. 0%. With 0% precincts reporting, 0% results are in. And apparently what happened in that particular case is they got this app that a company called Shadowy had put together. They paid $60,000 for it. And they hadn't tested. It wasn't working. And it was an app put together, by the way, by a bunch of ex-Hillary Clinton people that apparently Pete Buttigieg's campaign had purchased some services from them in the summer. So it was, it's like weird, like everything wrong to do. They didn't test the app. It wasn't reporting the results properly. Their backup system, which was phone call, was overloaded. It was just a debacle. They did not get the first results reported until the following day at 4 p.m. Central. And they only then reported 62% of the results. It was just an utter debacle. When we come back, I got to tell you about what the other precinct captain was doing. And then also, is Iowa a battleground state for the presidency in 2020? This is the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy, giving you a firsthand account of what happened in Iowa in the debacle of the Iowa Democratic caucuses. So I told you about, I got the report, wrote at Breitbart, of the results of both Precinct 5 and partial results from Precinct 3 of Waukee. I reported that and was published at Breitbart at about 9:45 Central on the caucus night. Those results were not officially reported by the party until like Thursday at noon. And so, not a good look. The other part in terms of saying not a good look is this. So remember, I'm in Waukee, Iowa, Monday night. In the main hall of St. Boniface Catholic Church, 260 people on one side of these 6-foot-high, temporary dividers in Precinct 5, and another 260 on the right-hand side in Precinct 3. So the person running Precinct 3 was a third-grade teacher and proceeded to treat every one of the 260 caucus attendees in that precinct like they were third graders. Oh, my goodness. It was, if I had been a caucus attendee, I would have bristled at the treatment. But not only that, wait for it, there's more. So remember the first alignment where you're supposed to, group around a candidate and then report the results. And again, I mentioned in Precinct 5, the precinct chair from the party, it hadn't really reported the raw results, which I thought they were supposed to do, to the group. It just simply said who was viable and not. That is, who got more than 15% of the vote. So the Precinct 3, the third grade teacher who was treating everybody there like a third grader. I kid you not. I'm watching this. I was 10 feet away from her. And when she was providing this announcement, she went up and said, well, only two candidates are viable here. That has got more than 15% of the first alignment votes. And they are Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And there was this big uproar from the back. No. And a woman came up, not in the most pleasant of moods, and waving a bunch of ballots and saying, no, you haven't counted the Pete Buttigieg ballots. And the third grade teacher who was leading the caucus said, well, you should have brought them up here. Really? No. I think what you do is you don't make the announcement of who's viable until you have a complete and thorough count, right? Because if there were 260 people there and you count only 160 votes, and then you don't make your announcement. You get all of the votes counted. So anyways, they brought a whole stack of it. And then they counted the Buttigieg votes. 79 for Buttigieg. And it was like 79 for Buttigieg, 46 for Sanders, 44 for Warren. So, you know, and then this precinct chair, without making any apologies for missing the original announcement that Pete Buttigieg was viable, announced, yeah, no, it's Buttigieg viable and Sanders viable and Warren viable. But again, we never got she did not report to the caucus attendees the raw votes for the other candidates like Yang and Klobuchar and, you know, whoever else would have been there. Biden did not report it. Let me talk about this for a moment. I really love the idea of caucuses because you have to go there, be in person, identify who you're for. It's very personal. But what's really bad about this is it was very poorly administered at every level, at the local level, at the caucus. The caucus chairs really didn't do a good job, at least from what I saw. And I think that was the case around the state. Could have been done a lot more effectively. I think I personally like the idea of a caucus. I think it's a really good way to do this. But it needs to be administered properly so that people have confidence that it's a free and fair election. People don't have that confidence right now. Don't have it at all, as a matter of fact. And that's where, you know, the question is, will the Iowa Democratic caucuses continue in 2024? Who knows? I mean, one thing I have to say, the pace of news this past week has been exhausting. I mean, think about this. On Sunday night, we have the Super Bowl, right? On Monday, we have the Iowa caucuses and the closing arguments on impeachment. On Tuesday night, we have, and then, yeah, and then the results aren't coming in. And then Tuesday night, we have the State of the Union. We have all the what's going on in Iowa. On Wednesday, we have the impeachment acquittal vote. Meanwhile, Iowa's still coming in. Meanwhile, they're going to New Hampshire. Then we have, on Thursday night, we have like 97% reporting from Iowa, from the state, finally. The Democratic National Committee chairman says, we need to do a re-canvass. And the Iowa folks says, no, we're not going to re-canvass unless the candidates ask for it. So there's that going on. Meanwhile, Pete Buttigieg declares victory, and Bernie Sanders declared victory. Just utter rapid movement chaos. And then, of course, you know, Friday night, we have the debate in New Hampshire, and then upcoming this week on Tuesday, the New Hampshire primary results. It's just, holy cow, give me a break from this ongoing onslaught of news. I think people are getting exhausted by it. I want to close off here on the discussion and see, is Iowa a battleground state in the 2020 presidential election? Tim Alberta, writing in Politico last week, said, no, it's not. He says that the Democrats have given up on Iowa. Because remember, in 2012, Barack Obama, and there are only now, there's six Electoral College votes, right? You need 270 to win the presidency, six in Iowa. In 2012, Barack Obama won Iowa by 10 points. In 2016, Donald Trump won Iowa by 10 points. According to Tim Alberta, one of the best political reporters in the country, Democrats have given up on Iowa. And, you know, I don't think the result, the debacle of the reporting on the Iowa caucuses by the Democratic Party does little to add to the possibility that it would be competitive. So I think I agree with Tim Alberta. I think it's going to be a Trump win in Iowa at the presidential level. However, why does Iowa matter? I'll tell you why. It's still a battleground in this regard. We've got a Senate race. Joni Ernst is up for re-election, the Republican. So that's going to matter a lot. Because, you know, the Republicans have a 53-47 majority in the Senate. If they take the Senate over, you know, there will be a different. And if they hold on to the House, they'll impeach President Trump again. It'll go to a trial in the Senate. That'll last forever if Chuck Schumer's running things. The other aspect of this, in Iowa, there are four congressional districts. One is represented by a Republican, Steve King, in the northwest part of it. The other three are represented by Democrats, all of whom beat Republicans who were incumbents in those districts in 2018. And they're all very marginal districts. I think most of them, I think all three of them are districts where President Trump won in those districts and the Democrat candidate beat the Republican. Those three House seats are going to be up for grabs in 2020. And so Iowa is not going to be a battleground state at the presidential level, but it's going to be a very important battleground state at the Senate level and for those three critical House seats, because I think, you know, if the Republicans need to win, get a net gain, I think it's like 19 votes. It's like 230 to 200, something like that. 232 to 203 now, something like that, in terms of the margin of the advantage they have. I think the Republicans need to win about 19 seats, net gain of 19, to take back the House. So those three Iowa congressional districts are right at the center of that. And those are all, from a Republican perspective, they're very narrow victories in districts Trump won. Now the Dirty 30, you know, those are 30 congressional districts that Trump won that Democrats represented in 2018. Those are all in play, and I think three of them are right there in Iowa. So there's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight in those three congressional districts and for the Senate race in Iowa. So it's going to be a battleground state. We will be doing more reporting from there, but I don't think at the presidential level, Iowa is a battleground state in 2020. Now, there are plenty of battleground states still left. In contrast to the fact of Iowa going to not being a battleground state, Ohio, which had for a while, I think President Trump won by 9 points in 2016. In Ohio, sort of a different story because, you know, the fact that Governor DeWine is basically a Kasich-type liberal Republican slash, you know, sides with Democrats a lot. He's continued high taxes, continued regulations of various stuff, various businesses. And in Ohio, the economic boom that you're seeing in the other parts of the country now under the Trump administration aren't happening. And there's grumbling there in Ohio, and it looks like Ohio could well be more in play in 2020. It presents a little bit of a challenge for the Trump campaign because they're trying to, you know, have the support of the Republican establishment in Ohio. And they're, you know, the mixed message is they're trying to support the growth of the economy, whereas most of the reports are saying that Ohio specifically is not sharing in that economic growth that the rest of the country is. And it's in part because the policies of the governor there are not the same as the Trump policy, you know, lower taxes, lower regulation. So it's a bit of a conundrum, and I don't think it's really been solved in Ohio. So you got that. You got Pennsylvania, battleground state. Trump won in 2016. That's up for grabs. Michigan up for grabs, and Minnesota, too, as well, up for grabs. We will have more on this next week, same time, same place, here on the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. I hope you have a great week and keep listening to Battleground State Report.